is going to be a little different, a little bit of a different kind of episode today. It's going to be more like it was kind of like last week, I think, or last time, not last week. I didn't do one last week. I was feeling like crap last week. I kind of like the way it worked out, so I'm going to try this as a new format. What I'm doing is like I'm writing a nice long monologues and going to read you the monologue and play an appropriate song or even a song created specifically for the monologue. I'm not going to do like a full 2 hour show today. Just giving you fair warning. One, it'll probably work out to be about an hour and 20 minutes or so. The first one is the Dissident. And today you're going to hear three songs that I've already released during this last week over on Liberty Beats podcast. The first monologue is called The Dissident. And that song was released last Monday. And then the other two are from By Rebel's new album called Feeding the Fiction, which is 2 Minute Hate Cycle and Tragic Overdose. Those two songs released last week, or this previous week, whatever. I'm going to go through the entire album of Feeding the Fiction with monologues to introduce each individual song in order so that you can get the concept of what Feeding the Fiction is about. So let's get the show on the road. Up next, The Dissident.
Turn it up, feel the sound, break the chains. Your voice, your choice, no data in vain. Liberty tunes where the free arts collide.
Before I get too far into this, yes, sound man minds, I am recording this time. Unlike the last time, I am recording. Are we live on Party and all that? Go over to. Looks like we're live on X. Looks like we're live on. Refresh. I gotta refresh the page. I never get things right. Anyways, I digress. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. Time appropriate greetings, my fellow travelers on this spinning rock around this sun in this broadcasting to you in this digital frontier. Uncle Bonehead here. And today I'm not talking about rebellion. I'm talking about something far more potent, far more dangerous to the entrenched powers that any Molotov cocktail or shouted slogan. I'm talking about dissidents. I get asked a lot, Uncle Bonehead, who are you? What are you, really? Are you some kind of a rebel? Do you want to burn it all down? People hear the name Byte Rebel in the personas, in the IAI music, and they see the iconoclasm. You know, the scary Guy Fawkes mask with glowing red eyes. Simple answer is no. I'm not a rebel. I'm something else. The rebel wants to reset the game by flipping the board. The rebel is often nothing more than a useful idiot. They are the agent of chaos the system loves to deploy, wittingly or not, to create the fear and disorder that justifies stricter security, more surveillance, and more control. The only thing a rebel is good for is creating violent chaos in order to implement stricter security and fear. The rebel is the system's justification. That's not real change. That's just laying the groundwork for a new set of masters. No, I am a dissident. And that distinction is everything. The dissident, as I frame it, simply wants to remind the other players that they can, at any time, stop playing by rules that don't serve them. The creed is simple. You are born free. That freedom is yours to maintain or to give away if you wish. The kicker about freedom is, it's not actually stolen when you willfully give it away for empty promises from others. So who am I? I'm just a guy who's been watching. I'm a guy who was born free just like you, and I've spent my entire life watching that freedom get whittled away. That's the how I got here. It wasn't one big dramatic theatrical gesture, and it wasn't a single quote-unquote Matrix moment. It was a slow, consistent, crawling march of a system that's been in place long before any of us. A system that has slowly been whittling away at our naturally born free rights our whole lives. No single generation is presented with a demand for total surrender. Instead, we are merely asked to accept one new, reasonable encroachment, a minor security protocol here, a slight data sharing mandate for the public good there. We are conditioned from the moment we draw breath to just accept the loss of a freedom as just another piece of life, like we're paying the cosmic cost of being human. The loss is reframed as progress. But I finally looked at that cosmic cost and said, no, that's not natural. That's not human. The system is what is eating away at us. Humans were meant to be stewards of the cosmos, to take care of it and make it flourish, not to be slaves to a system of a society that is bound to arbitrary rules set by a certain select few. We don't give away our freedom in one dramatic gesture. We trade it away, piece by piece, for convenience, for security, or merely for access to digital commons. The empty promise is seamless user experience or enhanced security protocols. In real life, we trade financial sovereignty for debt. We surrender our history to private credit bureaus, reducing us to an arbitrary social compliance score, credit score. Of course, I'm going to get a freaking phone call, and I'm on call. Let me just put him on hold. Anyways, in real life, we trade financial sovereignty for debt. We surrender our history to private credit bureaus, reducing us to an arbitrary social compliance score, credit score, to access capital like a house or a car, making us a leveraged asset. Privacy of person or safety. We willfully agreed to be irradiated or searched at the airport security theater for the privilege of travel, a right converted to a privilege. We trade our biometric data for a driver's license, which mutates into a de facto internal passport, conditioning us to show our papers for basic participation in society. Consumer privacy for discounts. We voluntarily use supermarket loyalty cards, trading a full spectrum analysis of our diet and vices for a token discount on cereal. In the digital sphere, we trade cognitive privacy for email. We accept a free file cabinet, Gmail, in exchange for giving a provider a master key, allowing them to scan the content of our private life, our plans, contracts, correspondence to build a profile that borders on precognitive. An amenity of movement for efficiency. We use GPS navigation, Waze, Google Maps, and consent to 24/7 geospatial tracking, building a pattern of life map that renders physical anonymity obsolete for the fastest route. Intellectual intent for answers. We use search engines and surrender a real-time, unvarnished feed of our curiosities, fears, and financial worries. We perfect predictive profile of human intent for instant answers. I don't know why I used the word, but autonomy for entertainment. We submit to algorithmic feeds on YouTube, TikTok, trading the freedom to be bored or to self-direct for a passive feed designed to capture our most infinite resource time. I'm going to play this song real quick, and then I'll be back after I go call this guy back and see what he wanted. Sorry about that. Wasn't hitting the button fast enough. Yeah. Anyways. Gamifying the submission. The system's goal isn't just to rule the human. It's to re-engineer the human. It wants a better slave. It wants a re-engaged user. The ultimate goal is optimization. The system is gamifying submission. It makes you want to put on the ankle monitor because it's also going to count your step. The quantified soul self, we strap on fitness trackers, Apple Watch, chase badges, and closing our rings. The submission, we enthusiastically strap a 24/7 biometric monitor to our body, generating invaluable data for insurance companies and data brokers. The win, quote unquote, the win, a small animated firework on your wrist. Social media uses likes and follower counts as literal points. We engage in behavioral self-censorship and performative speech, A-B testing our personality to see which version gets the highest score or engagement. The quote-unquote win of that? A high follower count, trading free expression for a focus group study of proved commodity. The ultimate end game is the centralized score. You gain points for compliance and lose points for critical opinions. The total willing surrender of all private thought and action is your submission. The win here is the privilege of buying a train ticket or getting a loan, things that were once rights. This is where the system protects itself. It's called tribalism. And to avoid the trap, once you realize you've been optimized, they offer you a ready-made identity to replace your lost sovereignty. Tribalism. Tribalism is the ultimate form of intellectual offloading. It's a subscription service for your worldview, offering a prepackaged identity and a sense of belonging in exchange for your critical thinking. You cannot be an Arkos or Anarchos, a self-ruler, and a loyal party member or brand evangelist at the same time. The moment you join a tribe, you outsource your decision-making and accept the dogma. You're not only wearing the chains, you're actively policing the other prisoners to make sure their chains are on too. Political tribalism, the whole left versus right paradigm, is the most successful psyop ever deployed. It keeps the entire populace screaming at each other over manufactured culture war issues, all while the select few in the uniparty system continue to consolidate power. The hard fall is the realization that your team winning the election changed absolutely nothing of substance. And the tank just painted its logo a different color. The true dissident cannot be a tribalist. Their allegiance isn't to a flag, a party, a logo, a platform. Their allegiance is autonomy and truth. The dissident's only tribe is the set of all other sovereign individuals trying to do the same. And this brings me to the labels. I don't care if you call this anarchy, libertarianism, agorism, left wing, right wing. The important thing isn't a name or a label. It isn't about wealth or lack of it. The important thing is you, the individual. How much are you, the individual, willing to fight for your own personal liberty and freedoms? The systems of control only care if you comply, not what you call yourself. The only dividing line that matters is between the individual who accepts self-rule and the individual who surrenders to the system, regardless of the political flag they wave. This brings me to the operational, how do I fight this question? I looked at their greatest tool of control, AI and emerging technology. And I see this as a double-edged sword. Big tech spent billions, if not trillions of dollars on enticing people into using AI for free, when we all know they are using it as a data vacuum. Nothing in technology is free. But the tech of AI can also be used against those very same people who still want to enslave us. They built a tank with this technology. It's a massive, centralized, powerful tank where one person screaming at the clouds wouldn't really do anything. Now that same person, armed with an AI and a little bit of training, can be holding a bazooka. That's my music. That's my podcast. That's this radio show. This podcast, my music, those are my bazookas. Their tank moves with institutional inertia. Powerful, but bureaucratic and predictable. The dissident armed with AI is the opposite. Our advantage is precision and asymmetrical leverage. We can create tidal waves in a goldfish pond. Our doctrine requires a two-front war. First, the internal front. This is a demand for operational security. Put down the crappy processed foods. Quit shooting up with all the meds. Quit being fat. Quit being timidly online 24/7. You can't effectively fight for freedom if your own biology and psychology are already compromised. This is the prerequisite for battle. Decondition the slave. Second, the external front. This is my explicit rejection of techno-ludism. Don't run from the technology just because the government and corporate overlords use it. Embrace it. Grab it by the proverbial barrel. Turn it around and point it right at them between the eyes and shout at the top of your lungs, "Try it again, I dare you." The AI is a tireless researcher that can find the single hairline crack in the tank's armor. Instead of spending a year reviewing 50,000 pages of a local FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act request, an individual can feed them into a self-hosted LLM, quickly extract any mentions of personal gifts or non-public meetings between officials and developers. The bazooka, the AI, finds the legislative poison pill hidden in a 2,000-page bill before it passes. The dissident competes with corporate media volume. You use AI to turn a cheap mic recording into a studio-quality broadcast. You use AI music generators to create professional backing tracks, layering on your dissident payload, your lyrics, giving you the call output of a full band. This allows you to produce a high-quality, data-driven video rebuttal to a state narrative in 90 minutes, not 90 days. It's a hell of a lot cheaper, too, by the way. The bazooka, as a defensive shield, use self-hosted LLMs as your private, uncompromised legal counsel to analyze long terms of service, summarizing what rights I'm giving away and what new forms of monitoring am I agreeing to. Your AI becomes your off-grid technical expert, reducing dependence on the system. Hold them accountable. And where do we aim this bazooka? Not at Washington, D.C., or global summits. That's way too big of any lasting waves. This is a rejection of symmetrical warfare. Start small. Start with your local neighborhood, your town, your city, your state. Your local officials are analog. They are vulnerable to localized high-fidelity pressure. Start a ripple in your pond. The goal is to start 1,000 synchronized ripples in 1,000 different ponds, which can then swell, merge, and collectively erode the system's foundation. We are not fighting by smashing. We are fighting by demonstrating obsolescence. So the final question, Uncle Bonehead, how far are you going to take this? My answer? All the way. And what does all the way look like? It's not a war. It's not burning a city. It's not replacing one set of rulers with another. All the way for me is making the entire concept of a ruler obsolete. My end game is the reclamation of the most slandered, most misunderstood, and most feared word in the political dictionary. Anarchy. Anarchy isn't chaos. It simply means you are your own ruler, not someone else. It has nothing to do with violence and everything to do with peace and freedom. The state's entire premise rests on the linguistic false flag that with it, without it, without a centralized, coercive, select few, the only alternative is violent, disorganized chaos. All the way is a future where we interact not through coercion and arbitrary rules, but through voluntary cooperation and mutual respect. We are not waging war on the system. We are demonstrating peacefully and effectively that the system is an expensive, unnecessary, and morally bankrupt relic. And I need you to hear me on this. We will only get there through peace, kindness, love, and respect. Our bazooka fires truth, not explosives. Our tidal wave is one of awakened consciousness, not destruction. Because here is the ultimate trap. If anyone turns to violence in this struggle, if we give them the rebel they so desperately want, it will spark the bloodiest, longest-lasting war the human race has ever seen. It would be a war where the only victor, the only beneficiary, would be the very system we seek to dismantle. No, we make the tank obsolete by showing it a better way. We are using its own high-tech tools to build a decentralized peer-to-peer network around it. We're not aiming to destroy the tank. We are aiming at the minds of the crew and the supply line, proving the tank is unnecessary, that it's running on fuel we willingly provide, and that we can simply walk away. I ask you today, as sovereign individuals standing on the precipice of a future defined by digital chains and true autonomy, how far are you willing to go for your own personal liberty and freedoms? How far are you willing to go for your children and their children's freedoms? Because if we lose this war for freedom, if we acquiesce to the optimization of the better slave, it could be a millennia before we get it back. Yeah, they call me. Wanna see the system crash and burn. A useful idiot, a lesson they will never learn. Cause every fire that you set just feeds their appetite, justifies the cameras, kills the freedom in the fading light. They want the chaos, they want the fear, they want the bloody streets so they can sell you safety, wrap the chains around your hands and feet. But I ain't here to flip the board and reset all their games. I'm here to unplug the console, make them forget their own names. I'm the dissident, the whisper that you can just walk away. Remind you that your freedom is a desert, take or give away. We are the glitching.
a man. Conditioned from the cradle to accept the digital trap that gamifying your submission. Wanna see you close or raise an ankle monitor. The couch steps and clips and damn wings of social credits go for access. Yeah, that's in final play. Trading rights for privileges to see another day. They re-engineer the human. They want you tame and entertain. And not so much consumer. Permanently shamed. We are the legend. Away from the uniparty puppets who consolidate the sway. You're screaming at your neighbor over manufactured hate. While the teachers paint this logo, fills the entire nation's fate. But a dissident ain't tribal, got no allegiance to uptight. My only loyalty is truth, ain't no returning to the gamma tribe. It's every individual who wants to stand up tall. The ones who rule themselves before they crash into the wall. We are the glitch in the machine. Born into freedom, the sovereignty. We won't be of the nice, won't be this live. Watch us make the mess of sense of leading ways. Fight, hide, we are the dissenters.
So how we fight, we don't run from the tech, we embrace a blade. It's a double-edged sword from the very top they made. They built a digital tank, but we're the asymmetric threat. I'm taking the A and aiming right back at the neck. This mic's a media factory, my voice a bazooka's boom. Exposing every lie and sweeping darkness from the room. We started in the neighborhood, the city, and the state. 1,000 ripples rising up to smash the prison gate.
Yeah, that's the way I'm going to try to do these from now on. I did have another, very, in case you didn't notice, the song that I played while I was returning that guy's phone call, the work call, was based on The Dissident. It kind of had the same melody and stuff going on in it. I had another version of that song that I was going to play because I wanted to have, you know, I thought it was cool having the monologue. I wrote the monologue when I first wrote the song, The Dissident. And I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll just read this on the show. And that's what this was. And I was going to make this into a big, you know, probably half hour long type thing with the other song. And I was like, yeah, screw it. Just one's enough for that little break I had to do. But this next, what we're going to do now is the Feeding the Fiction album. And the whole thing about Feeding the Fiction, it's six songs, and it's basically in a nutshell. It is a slap on the modern corporate media, social media, all of that. And it's, yeah. It is interesting to say the least. It is some of the hardest, heaviest Byte Rebel stuff I've done to this point. I've been using Suno version 5 for these last couple of weeks, and it's absolutely amazing. One of these days I should do a video or at least talk about what my process is now about putting stuff together, but I will eventually. So yeah, let's get into this here. I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this other, it's called Waves of Gold 2. It's the other instrumental that's based off of the Dissident song. We'll be right back.
is on RLM Radio. Own your data and rock your freedom.
So to sum it all up, you see why I put them together. The album of by Rebels, Feeding the Fiction album, and the song The Dissident, and my monologue for The Dissident. They all kind of go together. If you've been paying attention over the last, four, maybe five episodes, they've all been building up to this, and I didn't plan that. It's just the way it worked. And when I'm doing this, if this is the first time you've ever listened to my show, this is not anything like I usually do. And just the evolution over the last 6-7 months, I feel like the show has gone 180 degrees from where it originally started. When I first started podcasting back in 2005, I got into podcasting because I was wanting to learn how to record my music on the computer. I had never done that. And that's when I got exposed to the entire world of indie music and Creative Commons stuff. And that's where I've lived for the last 20-some years. And that's what I got into podcasting to do, was to promote other people's music and not mine. And now I've come full circle, and I'm using it to using my music through AI to promote the idea of freedom, something I never ever thought I would ever be doing. When I first started podcasting, I only wanted a podcast to talk about music and musicians and geeky kind of stuff like that. And then it moved into talking about the art of podcasting with other podcasters on Ryan's Top Shelf. And then from there, it moved on into Loud and Proud. Three different times. Three different shows. Local Loud and Proud, Loud and Proud, and Loud and Proud on MSB Waves. And then it evolved into Three Fat Guys. And then it evolved into just the self-hosted podcast. And then it turned into the Defluenced podcast. And it turned into Liberty Bites, and then it turned into Liberty Tunes, and that now I've got Liberty Beats to go along with Liberty Tunes. I don't think I'm ever going to change it from Liberty Tunes now, because it covers too much of what I'm dealing with now. And I never ever thought, I thought that I would be interested in doing something for politics, a political type talk show, and I'm not really one to talk about politics, but I do like to have fun about stupid shit, and there's a lot of stupid shit in the political realm, so that's why I do talk about the freedom angle. It's been a progression, and I'm loving every minute of it. I feel like I've found my calling, I guess you could, they say the calling type thing. The thing is, the dissonance. Somehow or another, I feel like that is the thing that people need to realize. I don't know if you've ever paid any attention. I did a song based on it, The Tiny Dot Theory by Larkin Rose. And if you don't watch Larkin Rose, go find Larkin Rose. He's awesome. And he's 99.9% correct on everything. If you follow him, you'll know about the tiny dot theory. Just look it up if you don't. It's pretty much everywhere. And people need to realize that they only have power over you because you allow them to do it. People give away their freedom willingly in exchange for something not worth their freedom. And people need to realize that you can be a thorn in the side of those people who wish to turn you into a better version of a user. They're not interested in creating slaves anymore. They want to optimize you into a better user. So, to end on it, I'm going to play, this is about 15 minutes long. It is a AI-generated podcast by Gemini. And it's based on my dissident monologue. I fed it into Gemini, and I asked Gemini to, create the podcast on it. And I thought it was actually really, really good. So I am going to play that right now. See, it's 4:15 after the... So it'll be about an hour and a half show today. So there you have it. Next week, I'm hoping I can do it next week. I may not because of some work conflicts, but we will see. But anyways, the next show, I'm going to keep up with this format. I'm going to do a monologue with a specialized song, a long monologue, and then I'm going to do a album concept if I can get it done between now and then. So this may not be able to go every week, but the next one is going to be a Chrome Crucifix album concept and the persona Chrome Crucifix. And this is about how the general topic of the concept of the album is how religion and churches and faith is extremely screwed up nowadays, and it is probably the oldest weaponized thing to enslave humanity. That's not anything against God. It is not, I'm not doing a hate on Christianity type thing, or hate on Jewish people, or hate on Muslim people. No. It's a hate on mankind version of God. I think I said that right. You might understand it. But anyways, here is Gemini's interpretation of The Dissident.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today, we're really cracking open some fascinating sources. They offer almost a tactical manual for, modern resistance. But maybe not resistance in the way you typically think about it. It's less physical, more psychological leverage. Our mission, really, is to unpack this line between being a rebel versus being a dissident.
Yeah, and that distinction is it's really key. Because the system, the sources argue, actually needs the rebel.
Yeah.
The rebel, as they define it, often wants to just, reset the game by flipping the board, causes chaos.
Right, creates disruption.
Exactly. But that chaos, ironically, it makes the rebel a kind of useful idiot because it gives the system the perfect excuse, the justification to clamp down harder, bring in stricter security.
Okay, so the rebel is reactive, maybe plays into their hands, but the dissident, they're more strategic.
That's the idea. The dissident operates differently. It's more about demonstrating, subtly maybe, that people can simply, you know, stop playing by rules that don't serve them.
So it's like an internal shift first, a mental opt-out before any big external action.
Precisely. And to really get how that works, you have to understand the core control mechanism today. It's not usually brute force. It's what our sources are calling willful surrender.
Willful surrender, meaning we choose it.
Kind of, mm-hmm. Yeah. We're not like forced into chains in some dramatic showdown. Mm. It's more that we trade away bits of our autonomy, little bits in these constant microtransactions,
yeah,
usually for something like perceived convenience.
That's the really unsettling part of this analysis, I think, that control is now mostly a service we opt into.
It feels like it sometimes.
Yeah, it's not one big sacrifice. It's this slow, almost invisible, the sources call it a crawling march, right? It just conditions us.
Mm-hmm. Conditions us to accept losing freedom as just normal, part of life.
Like it's unavoidable.
Exactly. The system sort of reframes losing liberty as the cosmic cost of being human. You know, freedom's messy, unpredictable. So the system offers safety, order, convenience instead. And that slow erosion, it just becomes background noise. You stop noticing it.
Okay, but if we're constantly giving stuff up, how does the system make that feel okay? Or even good? You mentioned the sources say the old bread and circuses playbook is updated.
It really has been, yeah. The new promise isn't free grain and gladiator games. It's a seamless user experience, or maybe enhanced security protocols.
Ah, the seamless experience.
Right. Control is perfected, really elegant, when the individual doesn't just accept the chain. They actually want it. They'll pay extra for it. Mm-hmm. Think about that ankle monitor analogy they used. The ultimate win for control is when you choose to wear the monitor because, hey, it also counts your steps.
That's chilling because you see it everywhere. This gamification of, well, everything returned into players, engineered for compliance using points and badges and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at the whole quantified self movement.
The fitness trackers, smartwatches.
Right. We willingly strap on these 24/7 monitors, mm-hmm. Apple Watch, a Fitbit, whatever. Why? To close rings, get badges, hit those streaks. The incentive is self-improvement, that little dopamine hit from the animation on your wrist.
Okay, but the submission part?
The submission is you're generating this constant minute-by-minute data stream. Your vitals, your location, your sleep patterns, your activity. And that data is incredibly valuable to, you know, data brokers, insurance companies, maybe even employers down the line.
So we pay $1,000 for the privilege of being a walking data source. And the clout economy on social media, does the same thing to our thoughts, doesn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. Likes, shares, follower counts.
Right.
Those are the points in that game. And to get more points, what do? You start engaging in behavioral self-censorship and performative speech.
Meaning you tailor what you say to get the likes.
You're subconsciously A-B testing your own expression, making sure it fits the algorithm, making sure it doesn't rock the boat too much. So like genuine free expression gets turned into this approved commodity. You trade authentic thought for follower counts.
Wow. Okay. And this isn't just digital, right? The sources point to analog examples too, like the whole debt system.
Oh, absolutely. The debt-based society is built on this voluntary surrender. To get basic things, a house, a car, maybe start a business, you generally have to surrender your entire financial history, hand it over to private companies.
The credit bureaus.
Right. And they take all that intensely personal data and boil it down to one single kind of arbitrary number, your credit score.
Which the sources call a social compliance score. That feels loaded. But I mean, isn't some kind of credit scoring necessary for like a complex economy to manage risk?
That's the perfect question, because the line gets blurry, right? And the system arguably wants it blurry. Sure, some risk assessment is needed. But the moment that score starts dictating access to things totally unrelated to the original loan risk, like getting certain jobs or insurance rates, has it crossed a line? Has it become less about financial risk and more a grade on how well you play by the rules? You've traded financial sovereignty for the privilege of basic participation.
That makes sense. And it connects to how other things, maybe even rights, get turned into privileges.
Like the state-issued license, yeah.
Driver's license.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It used to just prove you could operate a vehicle safely.
Mm.
Now, it's become this sort of de facto internal passport. You need it to fly domestically, open bank accounts, all sorts of things that have nothing to do with driving. And often, you're trading biometric data for it. So a basic right, maybe freedom of movement, becomes a state-granted privilege.
Okay, so the system is really good at engineering this willful surrender, creating this user who wants the seamless experience above all else. What's the end goal look like? What's the ideal better slave, as the sources put it, for this digital age?
Well, the ideal better slave isn't miserable. They're the perfect engaged user.
Yeah.
They're happy to pay that $1,000 premium for their chains, you know, the smart device, because it tracks their health and looks cool. And, crucially, they willingly generate all the predictive data that helps the system refine the algorithms that manage their choices, their behaviors.
So their biggest fear isn't, like, physical punishment. It's being disconnected.
Exactly. It's the error 404 on their digital ID. It's getting deplatformed. It's being kicked off the network because their identity is so tied to the network. They stop being a useful human resource.
Man. Okay. So technology, especially AI maybe, seems like the ultimate tool for capture here, accelerating all this.
It is. But here's the twist. The double-edged sword the sources talk about. Big tech, the system, whatever you want to call it. They built the tank.
Right.
It's huge, it's centralized, it's complex, but it's also become predictable in its own way.
Predictable how?
Its rules, its data flows, its dependencies, they're often exposed. And that predictability, that complexity, is also its biggest vulnerability.
Oh, okay. So this is where the asymmetric leverage comes in. The system is the tank.
And the dissident becomes the tank man with bazooka.
Okay, explain the bazooka. What is it, really?
It's AI. But used differently. The tank's advantage is scale, brute force. The dissident's advantage with AI is precision, leverage. It's a cognitive weapon. You can create, metaphorically, tidal waves in a goldfish pond because you can understand and target the system's own logic against it. All its exposed code, its laws, its data pathways. That's the blueprint for the bazooka's targeting system.
That sounds potentially incredibly powerful. Yeah. So if someone has this AI bazooka, metaphorically speaking, what's the game plan? How do you use it? The sources mentioned a two-front strategy.
Correct. And the first front is absolutely crucial. It's internal. You have to decondition the slave first. That's the prerequisite.
Amen.
Meaning if you're constantly distracted, if your body chemistry is messed up by, you know, processed foods or meds, if you're terminally online, your mind isn't yours. It's already colonized. You can't fight effectively.
So step one is reclaiming your own mind and body, getting focused. Put down the processed foods. Quit the meds if they're not essential. Quit being terminally online 24/7. Like operational security for your own consciousness.
Exactly. You have to be grounded and clear-headed. Once that internal front is, let's say, secured, then you move to the external front, which is counter-appropriation.
Counter-appropriation, not just rejecting tech.
No, definitely not technoludism. It's about embracing the tech, but turning the system's own tools back on the architects of control. Using their bazooka against them.
Okay, let's get practical. How does one person use AI to achieve the kind of impact that usually takes, like a whole organization? Give me an example, the investigative analyst idea.
Okay, right. So historically, maybe an activist or a journalist files a Freedom of Information Act request, FOIA,
yeah.
And they get back a massive data dump. 50,000 pages of emails, PDFs, spreadsheets, a digital stonewall.
Yeah, impossible for one person to go through meaningfully. It would take months, years, maybe.
Exactly, which is the point, often. Information overload as a defense.
I'm dead.
Now, the individual dissident takes those 50,000 pages and feeds them into their own AI model, a self-hosted large language model, crucial that it's self-hosted so the data stays private. Then they prompt the AI. Cross-reference all communications between council member X and developer Y. Look for undisclosed meetings. Find any mentions of Project Z before it was public. In hours, maybe an evening, the AI can surface connections, find anomalies, generate an actionable intelligence report that previously would have taken a team of lawyers ages.
Wow. So it just cuts through the noise instantly, finds the crack in the armor. What about the legislative detector function dealing with those monster bills?
Yeah, you know the drill. A 2,000-page omnibus bill drops late on a Friday. It's designed to be unreadable. Passed before anyone can figure out what's really in it.
Happens all the time.
So instead of waiting for think tanks or news outlets to maybe find something buried in there days later, the dissident feeds the entire bill text into their AI. They prompt it. Identify all clauses related to data sharing between agencies. Or summarize any changes to citizen surveillance powers. or flag new reporting requirements.
And the AI just spits it out.
It can highlight the exact paragraphs, the hidden whittling away clauses buried on page, 4,402. That tiny sentence that changes everything. It lets the dissident sound the alarm before it becomes law. It neutralizes that complexity barrier.
Incredible. Okay, and the third one, the media factory. How does that work?
Well, a big way the system maintains control is narrative dominance, right? Having the loudest voice, the slickest production. It's hard for one person to compete with a corporate media budget, the studios, the staff.
Do you get drowned out?
Used to be. But now, with AI tools, a single person can record audio on their phone, use AI to make it sound like it was recorded in a professional studio. They can generate custom, high-quality background music instantly, create unlimited unique visuals, videos, social media assets. Suddenly, one person can produce content with the volume and, frankly, the quality to compete head-on with established players. They can win the narrative war, or at least fight it effectively.
Okay, that's a powerful toolkit. Which brings us to the bigger picture, the strategy of obsolescence. If you have this AI bazooka, where do you aim it? The sources say not Washington, D.C.
Right. Trying to take down the big centralized targets head-on is usually futile. They're too big, too abstract, too well defended. The strategy has to be more like a distributed insurgency. Start local. Your neighborhood association, your city council, your state legislature.
Why local?
Because local targets are, as the sources put it, analog. They have names, faces, physical addresses. They're much more vulnerable to focused, high fidelity pressure that the AI bazooka helps generate. The goal isn't one giant explosion. It's 1,000 synchronized ripples starting locally that eventually build into a collective tidal wave.
1,000 ripples. But to get that synchronization, you need people working together, presumably. And the sources warn about something called the tribalism trap. How does that fit in?
Tribalism is framed as the system's primary user retention strategy. Think about that phrasing. It's called the ultimate form of intellectual offloading. Why bother thinking critically when you could just pick a team?
Left versus right, Apple versus Android, whatever the divide is.
Exactly. You get handed a prepackaged identity, a set of beliefs, a defined enemy, and then you spend all your energy defending your brand or yelling at the other side.
Which is comfortable in a weird way. Easier than figuring things out yourself. But while everyone's busy fighting their designated rivals,
the actual structures of control get stronger unnoticed. The system loves that infighting. It thrives on it. That's why the dissident path, the effective path, has to be what the sources call a peaceful checkmate.
Peaceful checkmate.
Yeah. The system actually wants the violent rebel, remember. That's the pretext it needs to expand control. Violence justifies more surveillance, more restrictions. The dissident aims for a different kind of victory, a rhetorical one, a logical one, showing that the tank, the control system, is actually unnecessary, outmoded.
And that connects to the final point, reclaiming the word anarchy. That sounds intentionally provocative.
It is, but the point is crucial. The system has worked for centuries to make anarchy mean chaos, violence, Mad Max scenarios. But the dissident, according to these sources, needs to reclaim its original meaning. Anarchos, literally without a ruler.
Self-rule, self-governance.
Exactly, yes. Self-mastery. Peaceful community management based on mutual respect, not top-down control. The AI bazooka isn't ultimately aimed at blowing up the tank physically. It's aimed at the minds of the crew inside the tank and everyone watching. It's about demonstrating that the tank only runs on fuel we willingly provide, and we can choose to stop providing it. We can choose self-rule instead.
That's quite a synthesis. Philosophy and tactics rolled into one. So the fight is internal, deconditioning yourself from being that perfectly engaged user, that better slave. And it's external, using these powerful new tools like AI with precision to create that asymmetric leverage against a system that feels overwhelming.
Yeah, the core idea is reclaiming individual agency. The sources suggest you're meant to be a steward of the cosmos. Inherently creative and sovereign, not just a predictable, manageable human resource.
So you, the listener, now have a kind of tactical manual. You see the trade-offs, what you might be giving up for convenience, and you see the potential of the tools, like AI, that could help restore some of that leverage, that asymmetry. The goal isn't destruction.
No, it's obsolescence. Making the old control systems irrelevant through peaceful, smart, persistent action, starting right where you are.
Which leads us with a final thought for you to chew on. We talked about how the system's big propaganda win was equating anarchy, meaning self-rule, with chaos. What other fundamental concepts, maybe words like privacy or security, even community, have been linguistically hijacked or redefined over time? Redefined by the system to make itself seem necessary, maybe start questioning the definitions you've always just accepted, see what happens.